It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that's why most of them over there don't like their Bill Cosby anymore. Yeah. Whereas ours, none of that shit happened. He's still hilarious. Evil, but hilarious.
How did you find all this out?
I read things.
Huh. It's kind of interesting, really.
No, I thought very much so.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I just now hit the record button, but you know.
Usually things we hear about over there aren't very interesting at all. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They got this thing over there called a Trump. No, never mind. It's not. It's like it's boring, like I said. Anyway, hello everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that looks lazier than vlogging, basically.
Mm-hmm.
We put in so little effort.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of amazing. I'm Evil Tony.
And I'm Evil William.
And we don't know what episode this is.
No, we don't.
We probably don't even have the same number system as you.
Probably not.
We have a new evil kitty named Addy. He's like, I hear they have an Addy over there too. Basically the same, but evil. Goatee.
Really? Basically. So coincidence? No, I guess it's not a coincidence.
No, it's the alternate
universe.
It's science.
Yeah.
It's physics.
Yep.
It's third season on of Fringe. I was so glad I got out of that. That's the two big ones for me where I gave up early and then went back and looked like on Wikipedia about like what I missed and was super happy with where I stopped.
Yeah,
one was Fringe and one was the Dune series. I stopped after 4 books and I felt like that was perfect. Because 5 and 6 started a new storyline. It was a dumb storyline and it never got finished until his son finished it. And I still kind of call bullshit on that one. Mostly because his son wrote a prequel trilogy all with somebody else that was they made up. And then later, when they finished their dad's series, it turned out that characters from their prequel trilogy that they invented showed up. And I'm like, yeah, that's what your dad had in mind all along. He was like, you know what I want to tell my story, son? You know that random story you were telling me? I want to tell that as mine. You know, that'll work. For those of you just joining us, we are evil. And from a universe where that's considered norm. Okay, from a different universe where that's considered the norm. Not your universe. It looks similar, but we all have goatees. Even people who already have goatees on their goatees. We are filling in for the other guys. So here's how it works. They have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address. themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People, like yourselves, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, topics, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifests physically within the hat itself. We, or they, it's
Elseworld.
Elseworld servants. Oh, good one. Draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the show.
And one of them is sick, or couldn't make it over...
Dead.
Something's happened to them over there, and we have to fill in.
Fire, flood.
Something.
Locusts.
So here we are.
Yep. And unlike them, we hate doing this, so don't expect a lot.
Nope. I hear we're very popular over there, though.
I'm getting that sense.
I have heard that.
People are into us, which I'm not surprised.
Why is that?
Everybody loves the goatee.
Oh, is that it?
Like, literally every living thing, at least, in our universe has a goatee. And even here, we know the goatee is sexy.
And we call it a goatee.
See? Yeah, no.
You'd think it would be like, we wouldn't even have a word for it because it's so common we take it for granted.
There is a universal constant through all the universes. Goatee is sexy. Even in universes, I suspect, where there are no goatees, if one were to show up, people would know that was sexy.
That's right.
Not even just as a feature on somebody. Like a goatee by itself, walking around is like, hey, I'm a goatee. You know, it's probably a tough, like wearing a leather jacket, like goatee shaped leather jacket.
Sure.
A little goatee cigarette hanging out of its, I don't know, somewhere. Yeah,
somewhere.
Yeah. Like it's
right tough. In the middle there, probably. It was
Brando, early Brando.
Remember when we sent that space probe out and we had that gold plaque and it had all kinds of mathematical stuff on it, and it also, of course, you know, had the universal, cosmic, actually. When I say universal, I mean really universal symbol of the goatee on it.
I'm going to be honest. I feel like the bit would have landed better if it had just been a gold goatee that we sent out.
What was gold? It was etched in the gold.
I feel like that would have... I feel like you overthought that one.
Okay, fine.
But yes, I do remember. It was very impressive.
It was evil Carl Sagan's idea.
That's the other weird thing. We call everybody evil whatever here. You wouldn't think that would come up, but since literally everyone and everything.
Well, my understanding is there was a certain group of people in a certain period of time over there where it was common to call someone good or goodly this, good or goodly that. So, like in they're Puritans or something, or they're, someone did that.
Yeah, we would know if it was in our history, but evil doesn't tend to look back on history a lot.
So it's just something we do.
Yeah.
Call each other evil. It's a show of respect.
Really?
Sure.
I should stop.
Well, I mean, you know, it's. I shouldn't say it's a show of respect. It's a habit. It probably started out as a show of respect. It's kind of it's regarded, I think, as something you do to be polite, but I don't think anyone does it to be polite. They just do it because that's what everybody does. Kind of like asking, how are you? Nobody really cares. But you do it because
it's... We do that here?
Sure. Well, I mean, some of us do. You might not.
I'm not sure either version of Tony does that.
Okay, well, a lot of people over here do.
I have actually noticed.
But we all know that nobody cares.
This is the thing. People ask me how I am. I'm very bad about... I mean, I tell them. I'm very bad at asking, and how are you? Producers tried to work with me on this a little bit. But I'm kind of just leaning into the idea, because my answers are always funny, and their answers are going to be boring. So I just go with it. I'm like, how are you? I'm like, oh, is it Friday yet? Or, oh, this is usually at work. Oh, shut up, I'm too tired. Or I just make a funny noise or whatever, and they laugh, and they move on. I'm like, I don't want to spend the time to be like, and how are you? And they're like, oh, I'm fine. Don't care. You're the only person I ask how they are. That's because I'm contractually obligated.
I ask people how they are, and I am actually interested to know. Like,
I believe that.
I wouldn't mind if they went into all of their problems or whatever. I'm interested to know. I mean, yeah, sometimes the social context is such that it's obvious that what they're quote-unquote supposed to answer is fine or I'm getting by, you know, some brief thing, because we don't have time to have a conversation about it. But when even in that context, if I'm asking sincerely, or I wouldn't ask. And I don't always ask.
Because sometimes you don't give a damn.
Well, sometimes I'm just not thinking about it. But if I ask, I really want to know.
See, I do that habit. But I try not to, so I'll be like, hey, how are you? Oh, sorry. That was the first time. I don't actually care. That works pretty well.
Well, I also have other greetings. I mean, for some people, that becomes their greeting.
Do you mostly do what's up?
Sure, yeah, other than say hello or
yeah.
Or whatever. I say other things besides that, so.
Sup, broheem. You say broheem a lot, and brosif.
No, I don't say that.
Bro-tato chip. Professor.
Maybe we should start trying things out of the hat before this devolves into something.
Hey, William.
What?
How you doing?
I'm
fine. I don't care.
That's good.
All right.
And how are you? See what I did there?
I don't care about that either. I don't even care how I'm doing.
Yes, you do. You really care about
how you're really doing. I do really care about how I'm doing. Maybe I just don't know how I'm doing. Deep inside. Maybe I need to take a little time and find out and ask myself, how are you doing? Was that ever a joke on Friends? It really should have been. One time it would have been like, Joey, you just have to look inside yourself and ask yourself, how you doing? Like, that really should have been a joke. If it wasn't, somebody invent time travel, go back, redo Friends, and stick that in somewhere. Just once, but...
Yeah, redo Friends. That's a good idea.
I saw a syndicated comedy of some sort that was clearly done at just the right time, such that there was a joke in it where they were encountering somebody who had been, like, isolated for a while, and so they were catching them up on the end of Friends. And I was like, remember when a lot of us cared about that? I watched the end of Friends. What's hilarious is I definitely did watch the end of Friends, and, like, on purpose, and it was a thing, and I couldn't tell you the end of Friends now.
Did I ever tell you that...
I can tell you the end of Forever Night. God damn, I can tell you the end of Forever Night. That show was an amazing ending. And it wasn't a very good show, but the ending was amazing.
Did I ever tell you I predicted the end of the Bob Newhart show? Not the first one, the second one.
No!
Newhart.
You did tell me this. You did tell me this.
I predicted it. And it was a joke, though. It was a total joke. I said, you know what's going to happen? At the end, he's going to wake up in bed with Suzanne Plachette. It's going to have all been a dream. I was totally joking.
There you go.
And then that's what they did.
And the last time you told this, I probably told this story, so I'm going to tell this again. One time I'm playing Trivial Pursuit in college, and somebody reads the question. It's not my turn. It's somebody else's turn. They say, what army's motto is blood and glory? And we're all like, what the hell? And so me, I'm like, oh, it's the Salvation Army. And and he can't get it. And he eventually says, I don't know. And the card reader just looks at me and says, you're not supposed to shout out the answer. Goddamn Salvation Army's original motto was blood and glory.
Like Christ's blood or something?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't think there was a parenthetical.
They probably ought to think again about that one.
I'm pretty sure it's not now, because I'm pretty sure I saw a commercial recently, and it had some new specific slogan. I'm like, well, clearly they're not using blood and glory anymore. But now they're probably not even the Salvation Army. They're probably Salvation Army LLC or some shit like that. Do you know the difference between like a LLC and a LC and a...
Liability Corporation.
Yeah, I know what they stand for, but I don't really know what that means. I mean, I can conjecture, but...
I did research into this stuff, trying to found my own businesses, and their various financial and or legal distinctions.
I did assume.
But that, I mean... You mean, do you want me to trill it down more than
no,
that?
No, I want you. I don't even want you to talk, so I don't know what's okay. going on. Just showed up here.
Well, you kind of asked, so.
Yeah, that's no excuse, though.
All right.
Get your shit together. William.
Just hand me the hat, okay?
Okay, but William.
Hat's over there. I can't reach it.
William.
No. Hi.
How are you doing?
Just hand me the hat.
Are you doing okay? Are you feeling all right?
Just hand me the hat.
I don't care. Sorry, I was worried you were going to tell me.
I wasn't.
Are you doing okay?
This is from coffee.
The weird thing is, sometime down the road, I'm legitimately going to ask, like, if you're doing all right, and you'll never believe I'm serious again.
Which means your mission is accomplished.
Hey! All right.
If happiness,
from coffee.
If happiness were money, what yes. kind of work would make you rich?
Heroin. Okay, so if money can't buy you happiness, but happiness is money, money can't buy money. That's fairly accurate.
She wants to know what work would make you happy.
Yeah, no, I know. She's being lyrical. That's the right word there.
Hmm.
I have yet to find it, so I don't know. We've discussed... Here's the hilarious thing about this. Back in the day, William and I have discussed this in a professional capacity. We were being paid to discuss this.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Because William, as we have described before, used to be my boss. And during his reviews, unlike some bosses, he would seriously sit down and be like, what do you want to do? And this is part of why he was a terrible boss. He was very eager for people to come up with stuff that had nothing to do with our company.
Sure.
He was using his boss powers to help us find other occupations.
Well, that's what would make you happy. Sure.
And I believe the one that you settled on last time was I should be writing RPG books.
Oh, really?
I believe that was the closest thing we could find. But I don't know, because I don't like working. I'm the dude from Office Space. Except I won't sue you if you accuse me of being gay.
Well, I do like working, and I just want to tell stories, you know, with a group of people. I want to collaborate with people to, whether it's putting a comic book together, whether it's even a novel, putting a novel together, films, TV shows, radio plays, whatever it is, comics. Did I already say comics?
You said a comic. No, we know there's more.
You know, whatever it is, I want to collaborate with a group of people and tell these stories. And that, if the joy I get from that could, you know, pay the grocery bill, that's what I'd like to do. That's what I've always wanted to do. There's never really been... I mean, there was a time in my life where I had a particular strategy toward that, which involved going to graduate school and things. I had an idea of how I could make it happen.
Yeah.
Which turns out was stupid. I should never have taken that route. I mean, just about everybody I know who does something that I think I'd love to be doing that, I mean, some of them didn't even go to college. Others went to college and got a 4-year degree. Some of them in English, you can imagine, but others in completely different things. But then they just
French
started writing things and getting to know people, and then got published somewhere. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Most of the people who do what I would enjoy doing, there's no college degree you get. There's no real career path. You just find the people who are doing it and you do it. And I had this grand idea that, if I do this, 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 and this, then that's going to facilitate this. And I was just totally wrong. I don't even know where I got the idea that that would work.
Well, and media is the economy of media is changing as we speak.
Right, but there are some things that have been true
from the
beginning. I mean, there are people who are getting, say, I would love to be, if I was working as a comic book writer right now, I'd love it. And there are people who I know have just gotten into it, and what did they do? Well, like I said, some of them got 4-year degrees, but sometimes not even in something like literature or English or anything like that. Some of them didn't even go to college. All they did was they wrote and wrote and wrote. They went to where the people were who do that kind of thing. They talked to them. They got to know people until someone was willing to read some of their stuff, and boom, there they are. You know, it's a lot like the way people become novelists. You just have to do it and hope that someone will represent you or otherwise buy your stuff and publish it, and that it'll reach a wide enough audience, and then you're doing it. And you could start doing it, if you're lucky, when you're 17, like some people have done. Or,
I hate those guys.
You know, now some people do go to college in the creative writing, and that does help them. But for the most part, in all of the professions that I would love, none of that's a requirement. All you have to do is do it. Now,
is that the tag you're taking now?
Well, sort of. I mean, and remember, I think of myself as a storyteller, not really a writer.
Yeah.
And there is a distinction to be made there.
Oh, I would think so, yeah.
But,
no, because that's, I like other forms of storytelling, but writing's my thing. Yeah. Writing's what I feel. And in fact, most stuff, when I'm doing things other than writing, I translate in my head sort of into how I would write it. There are exceptions. I like to think in terms of music. I'm not particularly... I don't want to say I'm not particularly good at music. I used to study music a lot, and then in my adult life I haven't really at all, so I don't think... And I'm not inspired to, like, try and, you know, play an instrument and cut an album or whatever. But I adore music, and so sometimes I do think in terms of those two.
Well, I mean, I've been a songwriter, and, you know, I've recorded songs. I'm fascinated with all kinds of storytelling mediums. In fact, the first thing I remember being a fan of when it comes to storytelling was conversational storytelling, anecdotes, jokes, relating the events of the day. I mean, those...
That's the version you haven't tried yet. You haven't tried stand-up.
I mean, things like...
You should do that.
When I was a kid, that's the first thing I can remember being fascinated with was just the art of conversation and every little aspect of it. And things like analogies and parables, you know, those things fascinating to me. So, you know, that's...
Perigees, analogies.
So I've always been fascinated with storytelling of all kinds. And I've tried just about every kind, and sometimes I'm okay with it. Sometimes I'm not so good at it. Sometimes I keep trying until I feel like, okay, I've gotten to a level of mastery of this that's not, like, earth-shattering, but I feel like I understand it. I'm just a big fan of storytelling in all of its manifestations, and I've tried pretty much everything. And I just would like to do that for a living, that's all. And I kind of am doing it for a living, but I'm not making very much money, so it's not much of a living yet. But, I mean, how would you answer this question?
I don't know. I really don't. If you could get paid to sit around and talk about whatever the fuck you wanted for a while, every day, or... paid to nap... Paid to...
What would you do? You would do... If you didn't have to do anything, you wouldn't do anything, but maybe every once in a while you'd podcast?
And
just,
yeah,
just put it out
totally.
There?
Have you seen Office Space?
Office Space, yeah.
Okay. So what would you do if you had $1 million and it's supposed to figure out what you want to do? But as Michael Bolton explains, it's bullshit because then we wouldn't have any janitors because nobody, if they had $1 million, would spend their time on clogging toilets. But our hero in that movie says if he had $1 million,
he'd
just wouldn't do nothing.
Yeah, that's his dream of doing nothing.
I'm a little like that. I mean, I don't know that I would do nothing, but all the things... Part of it is all the things I like to do aren't easily monetized. Part of it is all the things I like to do, if they are monetized, it frequently takes a lot of effort. Like, I like to play video games. To play video games as your job means one of two things. You're either a professional video game player, which takes a tremendous amount of effort and skill, and I'm way too old for. Literally, physically too old. Like, there are no professional game players that are older than, like, 30, because just literally the reflexes aren't there. Or you're, like, a video game tester, which is always the trick one. They're like, oh, make your living... Testing video games. Testing video games is not the same as playing video games, and it also pays for shit. And you work terribly long hours. It can be very stressful. It can be very tedious. These are the things. All the stuff I like to do isn't easily translated that way. And then there's the factor that I learned. I guess I always knew, but Trish really tipped me off to this one time, because she's knitting something at the moment in this story. Not right now. I don't know what she's doing right now. But in the story, she's knitting something. And she's like, I wish... people could just pay me to do this for a living. And I'm like, that we probably could. If you want to try that. And she's like, no. As soon as it was my job, I wouldn't enjoy doing it. As soon as I had to do it, and had to do this much, this often, or whatever, I wouldn't enjoy it. And that's the same thing for me. Built into the job that brings me total happiness is there is no quota of any kind. There's no required number of hours. There's no required number of units. There's no required amount of...
What if there was a demand or a call for something like people are going to get together, or maybe it's even for, maybe some parents are going to have, are going to host some kind of a party where some kids are going to come, and the kids are like that age where they still, you know, they're not little kids, but they still appreciate their parents inviting all their friends over for something. Mm-hmm. And there was a thing where they would call for to someone to entertain the kids. It would be calling someone over to do a role-playing session, an impromptu role-playing session. Not so much impromptu on your part, because you could come with something you had prepared.
Yeah.
And that was a business where, like, you, like, twice a week you could do this, and let's say, just for the sake of argument, that that would make enough money that you could just do that.
It's possible. The kid component makes it weird. It could either be better or worse that way.
But it might not be. I mean, other people could do it too. I mean, it's adults might want to do it. Like,
it is possible. But what I think is very likely is if I did it, like, say, twice a week, and after about 3 weeks of that, it came the day to do that, and somebody said to me, you know what? You can go do it, or you could skip it, and we'll still pay you, and it won't hurt your reputation as a professional GM or whatever. I would totally be like, okay, I'll stay home today.
Because you wouldn't have fun doing it?
No, I would. Just not as much fun as I'd have not doing it. As soon as it becomes work, it becomes a chore.
That's a frame of mind. I mean,
absolutely, absolutely.
Because
it is my psychological damage. Don't get me wrong.
Okay.
There's something about when you have to do it, and there's plenty of stuff. This is the thing. The question is not what is a job that you would like to have as a job. Because the job I have right now is the best job I've ever had. If they said, we'll pay you and you don't have to come anymore, I'm out. But the question is not, what's a job that you would like? The question is not, what's a job that you'd be good at? What's a job that you would enjoy doing while you're doing it? It's, what's a job that would literally give you happiness while you're doing it?
Right, which would never feel like you have to do it, even if you did have to do it.
Yeah, no, I think... That's tricky, because that's the thing. People have made me do things I didn't want to do that I enjoyed. And it's not that, like I'm just lazy. So, like, we bought tickets for a concert or something, and that night I'm like, oh, I was really tired. Let's just skip it. And Trish says, no, we got to go. And I go, and I'm really glad we went, and I had a good time. Doesn't mean that it won't come up again.
Doesn't mean it won't come up.
I have not somehow learned the lesson, and from now on, anytime I have tickets to something... I'll definitely go, even if I'm feeling tired. I haven't learned a lesson out of it, but I am aware. No, it's definitely my damage, but... there are jobs that I would probably like better, because, I mean, like, my job now is a good job, but it's mostly because I like the people, and I feel like I'm good at what I do. It's not because it's a particularly passionate thing for me to do, mm-hmm. To schedule meetings and, write up PowerPoint presentations and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, it probably is in the same sort of vein, storytelling vein. I don't know, working at Applied, especially on the vision team, I got a sense that I might have really enjoyed computer programming. Hmm. I don't know. It would involve going back to school, though, and I'm not willing to do that. School sucks. Alright, where's that? I'm drawing. Man, it is unseasonable weather for this time of year. I'm not saying what time of year it is, but unseasonable. Another one from coffee. Hmm. All right. What is for to be saying? Where did that come from? All right. Are you doing something you believe in, or are you just trying to believe in what you do? Wow, I feel like we sort of answered that in the last question.
Well, I mean, I think at certain at given points in my life, I've done both. You know, you were talking about how, you know, that question is bogus because nobody would want to clean toilets or whatever. Of course, that's beside the point, really, of asking that question, because the whole context of the question is you don't, you know, you are someone who's a professional who obviously has other options besides
you. You are considered, yeah, nobody's like, huh, should I take the graphic design job or the toilet job?
Exactly.
I mean, unless there's like a major financial difference.
Right. Now, well, and of course, one of the things about the Soviet Union that they sort of bragged about while I was visiting there was that
Marion Ross came to visit.
You do find people who want to clean the toilets because they pay more for those jobs.
There you go.
Because that makes sense. Why wouldn't you pay more for a job that nobody wants to do?
Cory Doctorow, in his first novel, Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom, which I have referenced before, is a future in which free energy exists, and therefore the basic economy is gone. There's no more scarce resources. So the only currency they have is something they call Muffy, and it's essentially a reputation-based or an influence-based right. currency. And one of the things they say is that the stuff that still has to get done, like the janitorial stuff, totally gets done because the people who do it get tons of Muffy for it because nobody else wants to do it. And so you get the reputation of like a goddamn rock star by cleaning the toilets, at least economically speaking, right. you do, because the other people don't want to do it.
So I was a janitor for many years. That's kind of the job I worked my way through college with. Mm. There were some like food service oriented stuff too, but and this was not a job, and I had to clean bathrooms. I had to clean, you know, lots of different things. This isn't a job that I dreaded going to. It's actually, it's a job I look forward to going to. I look forward to work every day. I liked my work. I got a great deal of satisfaction from doing a good job. And I think that, and that's just one job I can talk about, like other manual jobs. I worked in a furniture warehouse. Whenever I work a job, I do try to believe in what I'm doing. I do try to see what the value is in it. And if I find something about it that I think is, I'm not just making it up in my head, you know, it's like, no, this is what the true value of this job is, that actually makes me enjoy it and look forward to it, and I'm glad I'm doing it. On the other hand, until I started working on stories full-time, I never felt like whatever I was doing was what I was going to do for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that is to say, no, when I was working in the furniture warehouse, I wasn't doing the thing I believed in. But I did also believe in what I was doing. I mean, both of those things were true. And I just kind of had a notion that, well, okay, I'll be doing this for a while, and then I'll switch to something else. Or I'll do this, you know, I'm doing this job for now, and then in my free time I'll do this, and then I'll be able to transition from one to the other eventually. You know, I always had a plan to do the thing that I believed in. But in the meantime, I can still believe in what I do. I think that applies to you a little bit. I mean, you're talking about you like the people and you think you're reasonably good at what you're doing. Well, so, you know, there's a sense in which you feel like you're making some kind of a difference, if only that it makes a difference to your coworkers, that it makes their day better, that, you know, that you get your job done well, that you make them laugh, that you lighten the mood, you know, all these things you do at work. And there's some part of you, I suppose, that feels like, okay, this is making some kind of difference to these people, and so then I'm fulfilled by that.
I think this is interesting. My mind went in sort of a different direction with the whole question, because this has been an issue for me. The best example is the job, well, the long-term job, at least, that I had before this one was working newspaper, Iowa Farmer Today. Farming newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
I had friends who pointed out, and of course I was aware too, that there was something problematic about this, because most of our money came from places like Monsanto and Cargill, who, while one can argue they have done great things, in a lot of ways have fucked up a lot of things and are kind of giant evil corporations of doom. And I remember sort of trying to argue the case. And, like, I mean, I didn't ever be like, no, they're awesome. Like, it was always sort of a necessary evil kind of. But I remember trying to sort of stand up for it. And at the time, I really sort of thought that's what I believed, and maybe it was at the time. And then I get a job at ACT, and I'm so happy because I believe in ACT's mission, mm-hmm. like, and always have. Mm-hmm. And I don't, there's nothing that I'm like, oh yeah, but there is that thing that the ACT does. Like, that's not a thing. Now, that says nothing specifically, that says nothing to internal situation. This is not me speaking about how good an employer I think ACT is.
Yeah.
I'm also not saying I think they're a bad employer. I'm saying that's not the topic here.
Right.
What I'm saying is what ACT is trying to do is something I believe in, and I very much like that I can say I'm a part of that.
Yeah.
I am much more proud to say what I do now. Applied Systems, which was the one before,
mm-hmm.
where you and I worked, sort of middle of the road. I felt, because I don't usually take it to the level you're talking about. I'm like, I'm being a big help to my coworkers. I don't do that too much. A little more as I've drifted more into sort of support work and stuff. Because, I mean, that's what I do. What I'm doing doesn't help ACT's customers. What I'm doing helps some ACT employees that can help ACT's customers.
Right.
You know? And I feel good about that. But I remember at Applied, I liked that I felt like I was really doing something good for the customers.
Sure.
I didn't necessarily think Applied was an impressive or company to be lauded, or I wouldn't say I was proud to be working for Applied Systems.
Sure.
Not that I wasn't. I was pretty neutral. It was a company a dude made in his garage and turned into a pretty decent-sized company because he came up with a cool thing. That's it. Like, there's no real nobility or evil in that or anything.
Right, right, right.
But I'm talking to these little old lady bookkeepers on the phone. And
we're having a bad day.
And they love me to death.
And now they're having a good day.
And they would send me gift cards to Honey Baked Ham because they love me so much. Well, and especially in the area we were in accounting, you get a lot of people. Accounting's not exactly a super exciting, popular career path. So you would have a lot of older accountants. Also, there was a weird tendency at a lot of these independent insurance agents to just get their mom to do the books. Seriously, that came up a lot. Not the dad. It's always mom. Mom's a bookkeeper. I don't know why it was. Those were the two ways how the smaller agencies picked their bookkeeper. Either owner's mom, or they'd say, who's going to keep the books? And everyone would say, not it. And the last one, which is always some customer service rep who didn't say it fast enough, got stuck doing the books. Nobody was there because that was their deal. But they would understand accounting, but this damn computer stuff would throw them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a great sort of, you know, helping bridge the gap for them. Sometimes you would show them cool new shit that they didn't know the computer could do,
mm-hmm.
things
mm-hmm.
like that. Yeah, and I felt good about that.
Yeah, that was a good job for... I mean, if you had a good day, you know, it meant you left in, you know, 10, and depending on what product you're working on, 10, 20 people were having a bad day, but because of you, now they're having a better day or a good day. And that's a cool feeling to know that you're doing that.
And I don't know. I really got it down because there are horror stories of customers.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some. I had some bad ones.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority were just in the beginning when I was still learning. Because you just don't know how to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And it became a thing where, I don't know if it was me being good enough at diffusing or something, but like it just didn't happen. Like, the worst case scenario is somebody was disappointed with the result.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have a lot of people who were like mad at you.
Right, right.
But I was also good at, I'm good at doing that in general. If people are mad at my company or whatever, I'm really good at diffusing that. Because basically I just pretend that I'm on their side against the company. And it works out pretty. They'll be like, you're a stupid company. I was like, really? oh, wow, that is bad. Let me put you on hold for a second, check it out, and then I'll go out and be like, yeah, they're bitching about this. What can we do? I'll come back and say, wow, it's a mess. But, okay, I'm sorry that they're sticking to this, and it bugs me. I wouldn't do it either. But here's what I got you.
Yeah,
you know, right. And by the end, I'm their savior, and that's... no, literally, one of them started a church to me.
Mm.
It was a pretty cool deal.
Yeah.
That's where I was going to go afterwards, but that farming newspaper money just called. No, but then, I mean, then there have been jobs, mostly when I was younger, that I'm like, it didn't matter. And it's not that it wasn't worthwhile. Like, in your case with the janitorial thing, I think if I had a job like that, I would see the value of doing it. I would hate doing it because it's physical labor. I would just hate that. But I wouldn't feel bad about what I did.
Mm.
However, I would consider myself not particularly significant because I could just die on the spot and they could just stick a groundhog in my jumpsuit and they could do it too. And so that's like when I worked the cleaning crew at the Oregon State Fair, which I did for multiple years. Like, it's definitely something I had to be good at. Especially once you've worked it and realized the volume of crap that people at a state fair put out that you don't see.
I worked at the Iowa State Fair 1 year doing it.
And just the mountains of things. And especially because I got to where I worked on the garbage scow. So we went around changing the garbage cans. That has to happen way more. That's why you don't see it. It's because, little do you know, every 45 minutes, every freaking garbage can is being changed.
Right, right.
And so it's definitely important work. There was nothing special about me. I could have died behind the poultry building, and some guy stole my T-shirt and hat, and he could have just done my job.
Yeah, but does that matter? That matters to you to be that what you're doing can't be easily replaced by somebody else.
It doesn't. It decreases the significance. It's again when we're talking about. I guess I've sort of conflated with having pride in it. Mm. People say pride for work accomplished or whatever. I often don't feel that way unless I feel it is something that I have done in a unique way or something that I feel has taken me time to like learn and become good at.
Okay.
Required some sort of skill or training on my part, then I can feel some pride for it. And the first one comes up often because I do really mundane things at my job right now. I totally do them in ways nobody else does. I get information in ways, like, well, part of it is me being funny, but I mean, I write emails like nobody does. I keep a good sense. I know everybody, and if I don't know people, I'm really good at approaching them. I'm good at my job now, and I'm good at my job in a way that somebody else who has come in and trained for a few months would not be. That being said, I'm also bad at my job in certain ways, and somebody else coming in would probably be better at those things. But then there's jobs like that, or like the job at the vegetable processing plant. Like, not only could any other person have done that, relatively simple robotics could have been put together to do the stuff I did.
Yeah,
In one case, a camera and a broom handle could have replaced me and my broom handle.
I never really think about that aspect of it, whether just anyone else could have done it. I mean, all that concerns me in terms of whether or not I'm proud of it is that I did it, you know. And if someone else could have done it, I don't even think about that. Or if someone else could have done it better, I don't even think about that.
I just want it to be special. Cause, like, okay, so if we take things that I've always thought about, but I never done, and it's probably romanticized, and if I did it, it would not be as cool. But, like, woodworking. Every once in a while, I'm like, I want to try woodworking. I could enjoy woodworking, and I could feel it had significance, even if I wasn't that good, because there's artistry to it.
Sure.
You know? And it is possible. I feel it is unlikely, but it is possible I could get a sense that, you know, I cleaned that toilet in a way nobody else really did. Not even that nobody else could, but, you know, I have decided to do it in a unique fashion that I think is special.
Mm.
And then I could do that. But, to me, if I find nothing unique in the job I am doing, and the way I am doing it, then I'm just not that into it. So like if it's a button, if I just had to push a button all the time,
yeah.
Even if for some reason it couldn't be automated, I'd be like, no, any other finger can do this. There's nothing, there's nothing interesting about this. But that being said, that's also not the consideration for whether I like a job or not. I have had jobs where the bulk of it was alphabetizing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who knows the alphabet could. Although, to be fair, the average person is worse at alphabetizing than I expect. Just in my experience. But anyway, but the reason I like that is, well, depending on the situation, I could just sit in a chair all day, listen to podcasts and audiobooks, and get paid for it.
Mm.
So that's that I enjoy. But, you know, do I believe in what I'm doing? No. I could be folding paper airplanes. I do hate when it's something that I'm like, I really feel like this is useless. But if I tell them that and they listen to me, then I won't have a job. I've had a couple of things like that where I'm like, not only do I not consider me bringing anything to this, I feel like with a couple of slight modifications, this wouldn't even need to happen. That's a weird position to be in.
Yeah, I've been in that situation before. But in those cases, it's more like, I just don't feel like taking these people's money. When, you know, I'm going to do this, and then they're going to realize that they didn't even need to pay me all this. And I could be doing something else where, you know, maybe I'd be making more, or I'd feel like, yeah, this makes sense that I'm doing this job. I mean, just busy. I mean, I there's work that's tedious or busy work or whatever that I don't like, obviously.
Well, and sometimes, though, all of that's true, but you're like, I need the money.
Yeah.
And that's something I have difficulty empathizing with. I can sympathize, but I've never been, like, my life has been so coddled. I've had some money troubles, but it's never been like, I need this job that I fucking hate. Well, I mean, and it's been close, but, like, I walked out on that phone sales job after 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately I knew we wouldn't lose the house if I wasn't doing it. Right. And I had that option. People don't.
Yeah, right.
And I know that. I obviously know that. I frequently can forget that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Be like, why the hell would you work there? Well, so my kids don't starve.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I feel like that changes the whole
perspective.
And then, you know, hopefully, if you're lucky, you can believe in it because you're like, yeah, I'm feeding my kids. I should be proud of that.
I think that does happen.
I do. Unfortunately, I think too often people don't think in those terms.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm shitty. All I can do is flip and burn. And like, yeah, and your kids aren't dying. Good job.
Yep.
I feel like everybody in that position should feel that way. But
well, and there are a lot of people who have, you know, two or three jobs, and they're grateful for them.
Yep. And I know some people who actually like it. But I know somebody who works multiple part-time jobs, and she likes it way better than she would a full-time
job.
Yeah,
sure.
All right, draw another one, because we don't have a lot of time, but I think we got time for another one.
Okay. Stew.
No, like soup?
Nope, the guy.
Oh, all right. What does Welsh have to say?
Listening
to nobody likes whales in this universe either.
Listening to Try versus Regret, episode 268. It occurs to me, I'm not clever enough to comment on such things. What subjects are you unable to discuss?
First of all, what's going on in here?
I don't.
Addie's like in the hat, and it's not going well.
I don't.
I feel like you should get out of there. Seems to be really enjoying himself.
What subjects are you unable to discuss?
Ooh.
I think this comes up fairly frequently. I mean, it seems like I'm often saying I don't really feel qualified to speak on
but
this.
But that's not those aren't really subjects. Those are always like very specific questions, I think. I used to have, and I don't know if I still do.
Well, we were just talking about people who work several jobs, or for people who where their jobs are like life and death. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about how, and I'm in the same camp as you. I understand that. I know that that happens to people, and I can, you know, I have a perfectly functional human imagination, and I can kind of put myself in that position or whatever. But I've never experienced it myself.
Yeah.
So, speaking on behalf of that group of people, it would probably not be appropriate. I mean, you know, it probably would be. I mean, I could try to, but I would probably say a bunch of stuff that didn't make sense, and I probably can't even relate.
Well, and there's a lot of things, because they say unable to discuss. Because there's a couple of things here. Like, there's, do I feel unqualified? And we've talked about this before. Like, I believe that global climate change is a real thing. That man-made global climate change is a thing. I'm pretty confident. I'm pretty kind of alarmed with, I'd say, the general public, and I'm also kind of smug with the general public at those idiots who don't believe in it or claim not to believe in it and stuff like that. All that being said, I haven't read any of the evidence.
You're not qualified to debate.
Yeah, topic. I mean, I haven't said it, and so technically there's that, but I mean, I have had conversations about it, and I probably will in the future. And then there's the ones I feel unable to discuss. These are rare, and I'm not, that's what I'm saying. They used to exist. I'm not 100% sure I have any of these anymore, but ones that basically were of such significance to me that I could not rationally discuss them.
Mm-hmm.
The one that always stands out biggest for me is gay marriage. I could list for you some pretty decent reasons why it needed to happen. If I was speaking with anyone, no matter how rational and polite they were in the discourse, very quickly, I don't think I could do it, because my argument for gay marriage is, fuck you! Gay marriage, yes. If you disagree, you don't get a vote. I will kill you. Shut up. And I don't feel about that in most things, but I've discovered it's one of the two or three things that will make me unfriend you on Facebook. If you posted shit talking about how we need to protect traditional marriage, I didn't tell you, I didn't comment, I just unfriended you. Recently, somebody had a similar one about gun issues. I don't know about gun control, but it was actually the opposite. It was against gun control, and I just unfriended them. I had somebody who posted some absolute bullshit about transgenders, and I just unfriended them. And I mean, and it's a person that one was weird, because that's a person I actually see every once in a while, and we get along okay, but I'm just like, I'm not going to do it. And so those are ones that in a certain way I'm unable to discuss, because my only discussion is, shut up! At least with someone who disagrees with me. I don't know. I'm pretty good. A lot of people, and I have noticed a correlation, a lot of them are men, have difficulty admitting they don't know things that frequently manifests in talking as though they did.
Mm-hmm.
To the degree of genuine lies sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be like, oh yeah, did you see that thing or whatever? And they'll be like, yeah. I'm like, oh yeah, what'd you think about it? And they're like, no, I didn't really see. What the hell? I've had that. Or I'll be like, surely you didn't mean such and such. And they'll be like, yes. And I'm like, and it like took a minute to process. Like, no, I didn't mean that. But that's what they thought. Like, they just say what they think.
Yeah.
I've had some friends like that in the past. I have some friends like that now. I am probably a perpetrator of that. But I feel like I'm pretty good. I feel like I don't have a lot of issue with saying, I don't know, but I'm clue. Now, unlike you, if somebody calls for me to just randomly speculate, and we all know that's what I'm doing, I can do that forever.
Well, I mean,
but if somebody's honestly like, what is the... What does this political term actually mean? I'm like,
Well, of course, the context of the question Stu's asking is he's saying that he's not clever enough to address this. So maybe he wants to know if there are topics that we, when they come up, we feel like, gosh, I'm not really smart enough to talk about this. You know, like, I don't know, quantum mechanics or...
Here's one. I kind of feel that way about abortion. Kind of. Because I feel it is a very difficult position.
More difficult than people sometimes give it.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Within the realm of sane people, which is most of the people we don't ever hear talking about abortion, I absolutely see both sides, and I see both sides pretty clearly. And I can't give you a definitive answer, like the whole, you know, is abortion murder? I'm like, I honestly can't say. But there's two things that that sort of changed for me. The big one was, but I can't, I have to leave it up to the person who's got it inside them. I came to that decision in college, which is sad. I came to that decision a couple years after I became sexually active. And one day realized for myself that if I ever got a woman pregnant, I would absolutely be involved and we'd, you know, hopefully discuss it and stuff. But I knew no matter what, in either direction, she got the final vote.
Right.
No matter what. And I was like, I need to be prepared for that. If I am going to have sexual relations that have a non-zero chance of pregnancy, I have to be prepared to say right now, I'm okay with that, which means if I'm like, shit, I can't have a kid, and she decides to have the kid, I have to help the kid, I have to support the kid, I have to be there for the kid. Or if I'm like, oh my God, a kid, and she wants to abort it, I have to be okay with that. And I spent, you know, 2 minutes. I was a 20-year-old who was having a lot of sex. I didn't waste a lot of time on this decision. But I had to be like, are you willing to accept that risk for having sex? And that was a big realization for me that I was like, but I can't, we can't make the decision outside of there. And then the other one as I got older was I was like, abortion might be murder, but you know what? There's a fuck ton of things that are murder.
Well, that's, the main question is,
there's so many things we do in the world that are murder.
Right, the main question isn't whether or not it's murder. The main question is whether or not it should be illegal.
Yeah.
And that's a whole different question. And a lot
absolutely.
Of people don't
absolutely
treat it like it is, but it is. So, yeah, that's kind of...
Because even if you bring in the innocence thing, like, innocents get killed all the time, and sometimes it's a crime, and sometimes
yeah,
it's
that's
not.
Right, that's right.
And then you get into the fucking 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon kind of shit, where you did this thing that led to this thing that led to this thing, and then children died. It's like, so are you at fault?
In our society, the burden of proof is supposed to be on the person who wants it to be illegal. It's not... You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In our society, we're supposed to be, you know.
You have to prove a need.
Yeah.
A societal need.
If you're going to impinge on someone's rights, which every law does to some degree,
yeah.
The burden is on you to prove that that's necessary. Not okay. We should have a law. Now you prove that it isn't necessary. No, it doesn't work like that. You have to prove it is necessary, and so. That's really, from a legal standpoint, where the conversation should be and it often isn't.
Yeah.
I think for me, you know, where I don't, conversations where I don't feel clever enough, I guess, to speak to, sometimes it has to do with, like, things going on in the world.
Yeah.
Like, and on many levels. One, I have to look things up to remember, like, where a country is.
Yeah.
Or what the history of that country is and why these things are happening.
Because you are old.
So if I'm just in a conversation with people and I don't have a computer in front of me to look some stuff up and they start talking about certain geopolitical stuff, I'm not clever enough or smart enough to keep up with what they're talking about. Now, later, I might look some stuff up and form my own opinion about it and maybe in a future conversation. But if that future conversation doesn't happen for 6 months, then I'm lost again. So...
I don't have that problem because in that situation, I'm just going to ask them. I'm going to basically make them teach me, right?
No, that's true, and I'll do that also. I'll do that also, but...
And there's a lot...
But if I don't want to disturb the momentum of the conversation, I'll just sit there and either I'll hope that I can glean something from it, or I'll just sort of be lost and I'll have to look it up later because I don't want to interrupt what they're doing.
Well, and that's a skill that I think I still need to work on is sometimes I don't have to be in the conversation. And this probably is the root of the kind of person I was talking about who can't say, I don't know. I'm fine at saying, I don't know. I still have to, like, get in there. And because I'll do a lot of, in fact, I've had this with other people, and they're like, did you hear blah, 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 blah? And depending on who it is, I might be like, wow, really? Or I might be, yeah, what bullshit website did you read that from?
But
or,
I mean,
clearly, no, let me finish. So, but regardless, I can carry on because even the one that I'm like, I'm pretty sure this is bullshit, I'll be like, oh, well, if that's true, then blah, blah, blah,
and all this stuff. Yeah.
And we can talk about it. So even though I'm willing to admit I don't know, I'll just talk. You're positing something, so we'll just talk like that.
Hypothetically.
Yeah. Right. But my other answer is I could just not talk about it. And especially if there's more than one person in the room who are knowledgeable at it and talking about, I totally could just listen.
Exactly. But specifically with those geopolitical conversations is the questions I would have to ask are so basic that it would totally derail the conversation they're having. And there's
What's a Nubian?
Well, I mean, no, like, wait a minute. What country is that again? Where is that? What's the entire history of this country since colonial time? You know, you can't ask those questions because that's just going to mess up the conversation they're having. So you just listen and try to glean whatever you can from it.
I adore the movie Dogma, and that is probably one of the best lines in it. The second time, not when Jason Lee says it, when the other guy says it in repetition. We are over time. I'm sick of your face. Cats are freaking out. Let's wrap this up.
All right.
So listen to more episodes, hopefully not from us. Tune in next week when those guys, I don't know, what they'll do good universe things. What do they do?
I don't know.
Good. All right.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.